This is KVNF Regional News for Tuesday, June 10th. I'm Patricia Naft. For the first time in 30 years, all four gates at the Morrow Point Dam are open. KVNF's Laura Pomisano has more.
The Morrow Point Dam is between the Blue Mesa and Crystal Point dams on the Gunnison River. The dams are part of the Bureau of Reclamation's Aspinall Unit. The last time all four gates at Morrow Point were open was 1984, a major flood year. Justin Hogg, an agency spokeswoman, says although 2014 has been a wet year, the Bureau has the gates open as part of the 2012 Aspinall Record of Decision. The decision requires the Bureau to create higher and more natural downstream spring flows to benefit endangered species of fish.
So what we're trying to do with these releases, we're trying to flush out the river bottom from all of the dirt that's in it and silt, and just to kind of clean up the habitat.
Hawk says people can see Morrow Point Dam spilling from Cimarron parking lot on U.S. Highway 50 east of Montrose. For KVNF, I'm Laura Pomisano.
Sunday night's windstorm ripped through Grand Junction, toppling trees, power lines, and even causing a house fire. The Grand Junction Sentinel reports that the gusts brought down several power lines, cutting electricity to nearly 2,500 people. People living in many parts of rural Colorado still don't have access to high-speed internet. It's a problem for schools and businesses, and in eastern Colorado, it is making it harder for farmers to take full advantage of the latest technology. But as Benta Berkland reports, state lawmakers passed legislation this year to try and even the playing field.
If you look at a broadband map from the Governor's Office of Information Technology, you'll see high internet speeds are prominent in the larger metro areas of the Front Range, but it's a different story for places like Yuma County.
We are agriculture on steroids out here.
Darlene Carpio is the county's Director of Economic Development. She says the internet access they have now is too slow and unreliable, and that directly impacts their way of life, which is agriculture, an industry that brings in about $5 billion annually to the state.
It's big business that needs internet. It needs the very newest technology to be able to perform and compete, but it takes broadband to do that anymore.
That's why Carpio is serving on a regional task force studying what it would cost to bring broadband to the entire region. She's encouraged after lawmakers updated the state's telecom laws this year, creating a fund to put money into rural broadband.
You know, the tractors of today are nothing like the tractors of even 5 and 10 years ago. They are equipped with GPS, with incredible data technology.
But the technology used in today's field goes beyond traditional farm implements like this brand new $350,000 combine. Brian Cunningham is part of the 21st Century John Deere dealership in Yuma. He works with farmers on what's known as precision agriculture. The goal is to use the latest technology to collect and analyze information on yields and soil moisture to maximize production.
We can wirelessly transmit the data from the tractor back to our cloud servers and then down to the customer's computer in their office, becoming more and more in real time even. So the broadband speed and that connectivity is pretty important from that aspect.
Even with more farmers using the technology, Cunningham knows that it's difficult for internet providers to invest in sparsely populated areas with few overall customers.
I think most small towns are in the same situation, though. You know, we're kind of used to being behind a little bit, I think, as far as some of those conveniences you'd see in the city and things like that. I'm not sure we should be comfortable staying there.
Republican Representative Don Corum of Montrose helped sponsor the telecom reform package that passed during the legislative session. One of the flagship bills would redirect some of the money currently used to pay for high-cost landlines into building broadband connections in underserved areas. But Corum says it will take a while before people see impacts on the ground.
The first layer of the foundation, they'll start generating money next month, but it's probably a year before any of those funds are put back into the community.
For 29-year-old Luke Cure, who lives in Ray near the Kansas border, the changes can't come soon enough. He started his own business called Farm Rain to consult with farmers on using technology to make better decisions. He says it's an exciting time to be in the burgeoning industry, but internet service is a hurdle.
A farmer might have to drive to the top of the hill and wait for a while for that data set to load. We collected 375 million data points during planting, during 1 year on one person's farm. You extrapolate that out, and we're only collecting a very small subset of all the information that we could be gathering out there. It really, really slowed my business down.
Back in Yuma, Economic Development Director Darlene Carpio says she thinks people are becoming less complacent and trying to catch up with the times.
I am convinced that broadband is the next utility, as electricity was back in the 20s and 30s, as water is. It really is something we depend on now for our way of life.
Carpio says the goal is to bring broadband to every home and business in the region within the next 5 years. The task force is still studying what the total cost would be. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
And finally, the Bureau of Land Management has wrapped up its comment period about the leases under question in the White River National Forest. KVNF's Jake Ryan has more.
The BLM is currently running an environmental impact study on some existing oil and gas leases, leases they've already given out. This is David Boyd, a BLM representative.
BLM is doing an EIS, an environmental impact statement, looking at 65 existing leases on the White River National Forest. And the reason we're doing that is BLM needs to either adopt the Forest Service EIS, basically their analysis, or do our own. So back in 93, we did not do either of those. So we're doing this EIS to address that.
The public input section finished up last month. They took input from anyone, and they received tens of thousands of comments.
Go out to the public and we say, hey, what issues do you have that you want to see us address in this EIS? And do you have any information you think we need to consider? We got about 34,000 comments.
How many comments were brought to you guys?
34,000. But yeah, a lot of interest in this particular issue, particularly in the Roaring Fork and Colorado River Valleys.
34,000. How do you guys even begin to go through that?
Yeah, I mean, it's daunting, and that's one reason it does take a long time to complete an EIS, is because we do need to go through all those comments and summarize them and look for issues that we hadn't thought of, or the information that we need to consider that we might not have known. So it takes a lot of time to go through those, and that's what we're in the process of doing now.
The comments range from groups looking to shut down the leases and installed wells to energy corporations like Oxy Petroleum, who say that the BLM doesn't have the authority to revoke the leases even if they wanted to. But then again, the BLM may not want to. They have the option of revoking the leases, or just adding some extra restrictions, or not doing anything at all, just letting things stand. For KVNF, I'm Jake Ryan.
Stay tuned for Ashley and the Tuesday Morning Music Mix. For KVNF News, I'm Patricia Naft.